Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Back to the Framerate, part of the Westin Media Podcast Network. Back to the Framerate, where we watch and discuss films on VOD and streaming platforms for your entertainment. I am Nathan Shore, and I'm here with Brianna Butterworth and Sam Cole.
Hey, hey, hey.
Ho, ho, ho. Sam. Yeah, yeah. Christmas.
Holiday season, people.
It is. Yeah. It is the three of us today. Ellie is off traveling. She's with family and doing all her holiday stuff this week. So, hey, Ellie. Hope you're enjoying your
we
time with
you,
your family.
Ellie.
Hi, Ellie. It's me, Sam. I'm Sam Cole. How are you?
Well, this will be fun. We are wrapping up our fourth episode of our subversive holiday films on the show this week with the 1984 Joe Dante film Gremlins. So I don't know if we should let's not linger too long. But first of all, you know, it is today is we're releasing this on Christmas Day. So I guess Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody out there. And I hope you're enjoying the holiday season. But let's get into this episode. And I guess we'll start with, well, what should I start with? I guess what I usually do.
Want to start with the trailer? I'm going to give him a trailer.
Want to give him the trailer? I guess I'll give him the trailer. Here we are.
Billy Pelcer has a nice home.
Billy, is that you?
Yeah, Mom, it's me.
A nice job. A nice girl.
If you're not doing anything this Thursday night, maybe you'd like to go out on a date with me?
I'd love to.
And loving parents who are about to give him...
You're going to like this. No, 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 don't shake it. We're going to have to open it now. We'll wait till Christmas.
The most unusual gift he ever got.
What is it?
It's your new pet.
Come on, Barney, be a good dog. My dad gave it to me.
But there are a few things to keep in mind. If you expose it to the light, you may hurt it. If you get it wet, it will multiply.
All that from water? They got wet?
No, plain water.
And most important, no matter how much they beg, never, never let them eat after midnight. Because when they do, they change.
Rafe.
They become clever.
I'm going to cut it off there because I've had enough.
Oh, but it was going so well.
You know what? I grew up during this time and I remember this being a better trailer at the time. I don't know. This gives away so much of the movie and I just, it doesn't sell me for some reason. I don't know. But anyways, that's the official trailer that I found on Gremlins. There's some more modern trailers that I think they do a much better job kind of hiding plot details if you've never seen this movie. But anyways, so Sam, do you have some some movie facts for us.
Indeed I do. So I will discuss those movie facts. First, I would like to mention that my proper podcast microphone had some issues tonight, so I'm using regular computer audio. So to the legion of listeners out there, my apologies, and I hope I will do better for all 200,000 of you. Anyway, so yes, Gremlins. This film came out in 1984. It is directed by the amazing Joe Dante and executive produced by Steven Spielberg. This film was actually written by Chris Columbus, who many of you know from Harry Potter fame, and his inspiration, which I've always found fascinating and cool. This is actually from Wikipedia, and says, as Columbus explained, his inspiration came from his loft when at night what sounded like a platoon of mice would come out, and to hear them skittering around in the blackness was really creepy. So he wrote an original screenplay, which Spielberg took an interest in because he found it so original. Then he produced that. This movie actually, interestingly enough, opened on June 8th, 1984, the same day as Ghostbusters.
That's
insane. Terrible.
Just amazing. Yeah. And both films did like incredibly well that weekend. And
you would think that this would just completely cannibalize each other, these two movies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's crazy.
The supernatural elements and same target audience.
Yeah, imagine. I'm thinking about like Barbie and Oppenheimer were at least sort of
counter-programming.
I guess Gremlin Buster.
Like, what it would be, what it would have been like to have been like part of a 1984 audience that has that choice as two movies on the weekend. My like head would explode. I'd be keep like, this mind. Is great.
You have to go on a cheap Tuesday.
Yeah. I know you've got more movie facts, but remember back then, movies were in theaters for months as well.
Yes.
And we know that back then, the opening weekend didn't hold as much water as it does now. Right now, you've got like opening weekend and maybe two, 3 weekends after that where it is critical that you get like 90% of your box office receipts.
Oh, yeah.
And back then, if these came out on June 8th, you had the entire summer, you know, that they imagined they were going to make bank on. So it was a different time.
But what's so weird about this to me is this is so not a summer movie.
It's not a summer movie, but the director Joe Dante, and this is actually in like some making of footage, he's talking to the child actor, the kid from the store at the beginning of the film. Mm. He's talking to him about the movie, and so the kid says to him, he's like, so it's kind of come out at Christmas, right? And Joe Dante's rationale for it not coming out at Christmas, he said, since it's a Christmas movie, if it comes out at Christmas, by January people will not be interested in it because Christmas is over. So he's like, so we'll release it in the summer, and then Christmas can play and play and play. And so that was his decision.
It took a long time for movies to come to home video back in the 80s. But I'm guessing that this was not something people could even buy on VHS back in 1984 for the Christmas season. But I'm assuming maybe by December it might have gotten on HBO or something, possibly, but maybe not. I don't know. I wonder what because the windows were different back then for these things. I am curious because I'm guessing by the fall this was still in like second run theaters, and you know, probably through the fall and into the winter it probably was still playing in some theaters. I would not be surprised.
It was. I remember like even in the late 80s when I was still pretty young, there was like 5-6 months between theatrical release and VHS release, you know, depending on the success of the film. But like a movie I would see in the summer of like 1989 around Thanksgiving of 89, I'd see like posters for those films in video store.
Well, actually, I don't mean to interrupt you. The smartest thing was releasing this in the summer and the merchandising that Christmas season. How many people wanted their Gizmo doll and Gizmo merchandise for Christmas?
That brilliant, yes.
That is really, and we'll tie into that later in the show, but that's obviously what they were thinking.
Gizmo was like the Grogu baby Yoda of his day, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. He's like the original, yeah.
Sorry, Sam, continue. I didn't mean to cut you off on all that.
No worries. And so, yeah, so it came out June 8th, and by the end of its American screenings on November 29th, it actually had grossed over $148 million domestically, which, and that's in 1984 dollars. So it was the fourth highest grossing film of the year. I really love the cast starring Zach Galligan as Billy Peltzer, Phoebe Cates as Katie Berenger, Hoyt Axton as Randall Rand Peltzer, Polly Holiday as Ruby Deagle, Francis Lee McCain as Lynn Peltzer, Corey Feldman as Pete Fontaine, and Key Luke as Mr. Wing, the shop owner.
And one of my favorites is also Dick Miller plays the
Mr. God, Funny. There's so much more. He's Dick Miller,
yeah. He's great in this. Yeah.
But most importantly, Howie Mandel voices Gizmo.
Yeah. And Frank Welker,
Really,
really well-known voice actor, does Stripe. And, you know, he's been everywhere for decades and decades, lending his voice talents to a lot of projects.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, amazing cast in this, really.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I read that Phoebe wasn't their first choice after Fast Times at Ridgemont High. They weren't going to go with her. They think she was right for the role, and she crushed it. She did awesome.
I think it was.
I'm glad they picked her. She was like perfect in it. Yeah.
Was there any information about the casting of Zach Galligan? Because he was obviously a very unknown actor. I don't know if I've ever seen him in anything else.
Mm. No, I know, and it's like not even the most like informative story, but he was getting out of college to go to spring break in Florida. And he'd just gotten to like the hotel there. And then he got a missed phone call from the front desk, and he called back, and the front desk said it was his mom to say that he'd gotten the part in Gremlins. And so they needed to do costume fittings with him right away. So he immediately turned around and went back to the airport because he had to start the next day. So he like showed up at the beach, got the phone call and left. And like, I can't imagine that, the excitement of that experience.
That's the only thing that's better than spring break. Like if something's going to take me away from spring break, it's a Joe Dante and Steven Spielberg movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know he did some TV stuff, some minor TV stuff before this, but I think this is kind of the big thing.
So, all right. Anything else, Sam, or is that it?
That is what I got at the moment. If you guys have any other thoughts, but I mean, great film. Yeah, lots of technical problems with the Gremlins on the set. Really brief story. Spielberg and several executives showed up, I think, to like, you know, show the busy set and how everything was going. And he happened upon them when all the like crew working the Gremlins were asleep because they were recharging and stuff like that. So they walk in, like, all the Gremlins aren't active, all the crew is asleep. And like Spielberg and like
several suits come in the door.
He's like, oh shit. Yeah. But so that was a very entertaining story. But yeah, lots of technical difficulties, really, like,
and we'll the puppets fell apart.
Oh, puppet God, yeah. Puppet fell apart. Like, lots of obstacles in this film.
They got it done.
All right. And what I know, that was composed by Jerry Goldsmith, who has a laundry list of credits from Patton, Planet of the Apes, The Omen. He did Alien, which I love that score, and the original first Star Trek movie, Poltergeist and Secret of Nim. Many
LA of Confidential. Films.
He's incredible. So yeah.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
So, So why don't we just give our brief thoughts, each of us, on our thoughts on this film and in a star rating. So, Sam, why don't I start with you?
So I truly love this movie because I like grew up with it as a kid, and like my like father introduced it to me on VHS, and the concept for me, even when I first saw this movie as a 7-year-old, for me, it was always like fun, scary, not scary, scary. I was never like terrified. I was just truly enjoying the almost like anarchic glee of the film. It's funny. It's difficult to discuss it because I've seen it so many times. It's like, so my review of the film is really positive. I love that it starts off in the tone of kind of like, it's got a very E.T. cute vibe. Like Gizmo shows up and it's everything's very sweet. And then all of a sudden the movie goes completely like horror, bonkers, wacky fun. Always love this film, the build up, the scenes. Dick Miller's performance as the American, he's like, who just is like blames all machinery on like foreign parts being an issue, like such a stereotypical, like his character, he's in several Joe Dante films and like, he was just amazing. I love Once Everything Goes Crazy. I love the climax. I just like the structure to the movie. It's hard to almost focus because I've known the movie for so long, have so much praise for it. But I would say, in a nutshell, to sum up, I love the film. I think it's great. I think it works. There are several other Joe Dante films that I like a lot, including Gremlins 2, which is a wacky, insane sequel that
Stop trying to get me to watch Gremlins 2.
I can't. These
I'm
two
not
have
gonna
not
do it.
People of Earth, these Under two have direct. Not seen Gremlins 2. These two people have not seen Gremlins 2, and it is you know what? I don't blame them. I have patience, but we'll be able to correct that in time.
I'm gonna cut your mic again.
Yeah, my mic is gone. But yeah, so in a nutshell, I would say I would give it 4.5 stars for me personally. Just because I have so much of a history I saw it when I was really a little kid, and I saw it over the years. Like, all the memories are kind of intertwined. Mm-hmm. So it's almost impossible for me to be biased because I'm like too close to the material just because I've seen it so many times. Yeah. But yeah. Without going, and we'll like go into detail in a moment, but like without going into scene details, just like my brief opinion, that I just overwhelming love the humor, love Joe Dante's cynical, twisted, like aware of corporate dark side that he has in a lot of his films. And it's really cynical, and it's like there's a hint of like mean spiritedness, but it's done with such craftsmanship that it amuses the hell out of me. I love the dark. I love
it's
the
like George Carlin-y.
Yes. Really, I love the like Jekyll and Hyde vibe of this movie. It's like all cutesy. And then like, I like the like jabs at E.T. and just the tone of it. So yeah, positive review, 4.5 stars, rambling on forever. My apologies.
Okay. B.
I can't follow that. I don't know. What do you want me to say? It's a good movie. I didn't grow up with Gremlins. So I'm in that weird liminal space where Gremlins like came out kind of close to when I was born. It was like 5 or 6 years before I was born. So at that point, it wasn't like the cult classic. It's everywhere that it is now. I think at least it didn't seem that way as a kid. It didn't seem ubiquitous like it does now. There was other stuff coming out. There were the Home Alones that were coming out when I was young, that kind of stuff. So it wasn't a Christmas classic for me, but at the same time, there's nothing I don't like about this movie. If you put it on, I'm having like a good time. I love B horror movies, and I love that this rides the line of like, it's not a spoof. It's not a spoof like a lot of stuff that came out in the 80s. It doesn't feel like it's making fun of horror. It's not a horror spoof, I should say. It doesn't feel like it's making fun of horror movies. It's just got scary stuff in it, and it's not a horror movie. It's just funny. And I really love that energy, and I think that's so embedded in some of my favorite 80s B horror movies. So in that way, I think it sort of like falls into the pantheon of like other 80s B horror that I really love. But for me, it's not the like classic. It was on TV all the time, watched it all the time. I've seen this movie like maybe 3 or 4 times.
You bring up a really good point too about how you were saying that like you like the sort of original tone of the film, and like that's one thing that I like about it because it's so its own thing. Like it's committed to its own vision, and so the Gremlins are like a unique thing, and it's not like, oh, we're spoofing this. Like they may mimic things in their behavior, but they themselves, like the creepy creation is taken seriously. And like when they hatch, I find it really, really spooky and like
really effective,
unnerving. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really effective. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt kind of alien-y with all, it's a wet movie. In a
it
lot
does.
Of ways.
It's got that wetness. And I also like the not fairy tale is definitely the wrong word, but like the
it's like fantastical, magical,
and like it ends on that note when Gizmo has to leave. It's just like the last shot of voiceover, and he's walking out into the street. It's got this like mystical.
That's very Spielberg-y though, right?
It's Spielberg.
Like that, like
it's very
that,
like
lofty kind of
that lofty like kind of cool epic feeling, and I love it. And it somehow manages to tug at the heartstrings just like a little bit. It's like holiday warmth, but not in like a overly sentimental, like sweetie.
Yeah,
like,
it's like a holiday boy, scented candle, but no one actually made cookies.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
Like
exactly. Like, all you get is like you get the aroma and the flavor, and you're like, hey, that's pretty good. Enough. That is pretty good. That's good. Yeah. Bob De Niro.
Yeah, that's good movie.
I always thought this is like what if Norman Rockwell but twisted, you know?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's you know I'm not gonna toot my own horn, but you know the movie that I made and I kind of mentioned last week is the whole point of this. Like, you know, Spielberg made this movie, this family friendly movie, but honestly, it's not Spielberg, but Joe Dante, but it's really twisted. But it didn't go far enough.
Well, Dante wanted it darker. Yeah. I was reading some movies. He wanted it really dark. I mean, there was some decapitation. The dog died.
The original script, and
Gizmo transformed the original script too.
In the original script, the mother got beheaded and like
decapitation.
Peltzer, like the kid comes home and like her head's like rolling down the stairs. How messed up psycho would that be?
That's a Peter Jackson movie.
That's a Peter Jackson movie. Yeah.
Yes.
But Spielberg came in and was like, the people, they're going to want to see this moment. He was right, because I do.
Probably made an extra $200 million because of that and sold
millions
in merchandise.
Yeah.
Spielberg just knew he was like, he could see the audience responding so well to Gizmo. And he's like, we can't lose this character in the first third of the movie. Like, he must survive. And they like rewrote it. And then it's like, totally, I'm like, I totally get it. And like, it's fine because it still works, you know?
And now Howie Mandel does game shows. That's how I know him. When I heard he was the voice of Gizmo, I was like, the game show guy? That's crazy. What? A magician or something? I don't know.
And the movie Walk Like a Man.
I don't know.
Okay. If I'm
That sounds like an Amanda Bynes movie. I don't know anything.
When the family at the end, like the father, like when we're watching like Gizmo and the like shop owner walk away, but it's the family standing outside and it's like the mother and the father and then the son and his girlfriend, the way they're just like lined up, like it's like a postcard shot. It's such a Spielberg, like tug at the heartstrings. It's also like generational. It's like, here's the parents and then here is the next generation that will follow them. Like, it's kind of, it just hits it on the nose a little bit, but it works. Like, so I'm aware of what it's doing, but I'm buying it, you know, like I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So B, what's your rating for this?
I don't know.
I'm putting your feet to the fire.
Oh man. I don't know. I guess like 3.5. Okay. Four. It's a 4-star movie.
Four stars.
Yeah. Okay. There's like nothing I don't like about it, you know?
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
By the way, I will make it official now, and so I will like commit these guys to it, even if they don't want to. But in the future, at an undisclosed time, we will be reviewing Gremlins 2.
That's going to be a great conversation.
That's going to be a conversation and a half, not to be confused with Naked Gun 2.5, a funny movie.
I love the Naked Gun movies. Yeah,
they're great. Yeah.
All right.
Nathan, what did you think of Gremlins?
So I guess, you know, like many people of similar vintage, I'll say, you know, I grew up with this film. I was 9, 10, maybe in the summer of 84. Yeah. I'm telling you, I don't know if there was a better time between the ages of 9 and 11, between the years of 83 and 85 when it came to movies. Mm-hmm. They were, I think, just made for us back then, I feel. And I saw this a couple of times in the theater.
Awesome.
Twice to see this, at least. I probably saw this with other friends' parents. I probably saw this more times than any movie. This and Short Circuit, I saw four or five times in a theater. That's a little known fact, yeah.
But did you see Ghostbusters?
I saw Ghostbusters in the theater. I think only one time, because Ghostbusters legitimately scared me.
Mm.
Yeah. You know why? It was the ghosts in the library in the beginning of the movie scared the hell out
that
of me.
That is scary. It, yeah. Like, it still is, yeah, because yeah. It's well done and there's something creepy about it. I agree. It's like, it's comedy, but scary.
Well, libraries, you know? I know. Watch movies.
So this movie back then, as, you know, 9-10-year-old Nathan, this was my jam completely. And I revisit this maybe every 7, 8, 9 years or so in my life. But as of right now, so we're talking right now, what I think about this. And I watched this for the podcast last week. And it's the first time I probably watched this with a critical eye, wearing my review hat.
Which I've
never done before. It's weird. Of all the movies we've watched on this podcast, is the one I've probably seen the most, probably well over 20 times in my life. And I can say on an entertainment level, this movie, I'll call this Spielbergian gold. It is on the Mount Rushmore of classic 80s films, no doubt. It's a perfect blend of horror, comedy, and adventure, I think we should mention as well.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
It's perfectly situated in, like I said, the Steven Spielberg wheelhouse. And I think what's interesting is, you know, I bring Spielberg up a lot because this feels like his fingerprints are all over this. And I think for 100%. years, like a lot of people probably thought this was a Steven Spielberg directed movie. The first thing you see is Steven Spielberg Presents. Probably went well into the 90s.
The Amblin logo?
Joe Dante directed this. So I'm thinking like, oh yeah, Spielberg directed this. Because in all the references to all of his films, E.T., and of course on the movie marquee, you even see the working titles of his movies, like A Boy's Life,
Wonder in the Skies,
all these movies, which are working titles for his movies, like Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T. You know, it's like, I mean, of course, it's Spielberg to the T. So, but you know, watching this now, I'm really thinking about the underlying themes of this movie, and really thought about this, I really, you know, started to notice all like things like the consequences of consumerism and like the American capitalism, xenophobia, fear of foreign imports. I never really thought about this stuff beforehand. Yeah. And I think it's just a very, really great satirical indictment on these topics that I just think are brilliantly crafted.
Yeah, the father's inventions that consistently fail, I think, are a great, like, they can be read as funny, but they're also a great commentary. And then he has to go buy this gift that also kind of fails. It's really interesting.
So bad for the family is held hostage by his dad's inventions. They walk into the kitchen and they look over at the orange juice maker like, oh crap, this morning is not going to go well, because they just know that that what they have to deal with.
And the thing just explodes. I'm like, I would just move. It feels easier to move than to clean up that
mess. Feel bad for him as well, you know. I guess I'll just leave it at that, because I think once you begin to dissect this film, the rules, the character motivations, I do think you begin to see the cracks in the infrastructure of this film. And
considered that that's not important?
I know.
Yet again, I will point to Gremlins 2 that hilariously acknowledges this point. There's a whole conversation in that movie about, but what about different time zones? This is ridiculous, guys. Like Gremlins 2, I'm telling you. Yeah.
We'll get into it in a bit. You know, it's a topic that's been discussed for almost 40 years. So we don't have to
To your point, I don't know, and this is just to the class. Do we collectively feel like we need our characters to have like very clear motivations all the time? Do we need that spelled out?
I would say that the most important thing, if you make an emotional connection with a character in a movie, then they're if you think about it, like, I agree, like the depth of the quote unquote, like, science behind the plot is quite thin because it's like a like a fairy tale thing. And like I do see the cracks. I do think there's also like I love the movie, but if we were speaking critically, I feel there's a little like plant and payoffs missing in certain areas. Like Judge Reinhold has this like I'm a jerk scene, and then he like never comes back. Not that he's a particularly important character.
He was in another, some scenes that that were cut.
Yeah, that were cut, and maybe they were cut for a good reason. But I hear what you're saying, Nathan. But yeah,
because I think of this movie like I think of The Princess Bride, like that kind of level of like
fantasy type.
Yeah,
archetypes. Yeah. Everyone's an archetype.
For me, it works in like what really. I think what I love about the movie is the like the eerie Christmas setting. Like when they first hatch in the mother's house and she's like alone and like fends them off like a total badass. It's just that scene is so it's funny.
We're going to get there, Sam.
But it's like it's terrifying too. You know what I mean? Like it's action packed. But yeah.
But I think I've stayed in my piece in this. You know, but you know, bottom line is this was 80s. Family entertainment, and for what it's worth, I think it's an amazing spectacle, and it's a hell of a lot of fun. So, if I look at it at that surface level, I think it's a really fun film. I'm giving it 4 stars, 4 stars. I'm happy with that because I still think that it's I do have some. I think it could have been better with a little more consistency. With
by the end, I have real I get it vibes.
Yeah. But all right. So let's just talk about the plot a little bit. All right. And let me pull it up here. So the beginning of this, he's buying the gift. He's in the shop with the three rules. We got Mr. Wing. We got this, his grandson and Mr. Peltzer. Right. Mm-hmm. All right.
By the way, a quick shout out to the DP, John Hora, who he also was a DP for Honey, I Blow Up the Kid and Starship Troopers. His the whole Chinatown set was like the back lot of Burbank. The lighting job, like the atmosphere of creating, like I just so love cool. the look of that opening scene. It's got a really early 80s, like the smoky. Whole vibe. I just remember being a little kid and that moment got me interested in the movie in the first place when the little kid was taking Hoyt Axon to the basement and he's like, this is your father's store. And it's like down a flight of steps. I was just like, oh, this movie's going to be good. I can feel it. I didn't know why. This is the vibe, you know?
Well, it's amazing set design and production design in that shop. And it's really setting a great tone for the beginning of this film. So yeah.
Yeah, I love that it immediately introduces the father as just such a tone-deaf putz when he tries to sell something to the shop owner. He's like, eh.
Bathroom buddy. That thing is like the size of a toaster.
Yeah. I love Hoyt Axton's character like as Peltzer because he's so tone-deaf, but yet the way he plays the character, you don't like you don't hate the guy. Like he's not, you're not like, oh, this moron that pisses me off. It's like, oh, this lovable, he's in his goof. World. Yeah.
But it goes back to the themes of like the small town America, like the little man and their dream of getting against big business as well. Because he is just a small time inventor trying to make his nut in the world. So it is the little guy versus the big guy kind of mentality.
I think there's an argument to read this movie as anti-capitalist. I don't know if that was its intention, but I think you can parse that out if you're looking for it.
Gremlins 2 takes place in an office building in New York and the capitalism is even worse.
Sam, we are not reviewing that right now.
I know, I can't help myself.
What's funny, so it's he eventually gets the gizmo, but it's the grandson that tells him the three rules, but it's like he says like don't get he doesn't like bright light. Sunlight will kill him. That's the only thing they actually tells him that will be consequences to this, which I think is kind of funny, like don't get him wet. But he never says what happens. And that kind of drove me nuts because I realized that in the real world, and again, this is me like, you know, like, I realize that this is fans, it's just a movie, but like, if I were Hoyt Axton, I'd be like, well, okay, what happens if it gets wet? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. Or what happens if I feed it after midnight?
Do you think there was an element of like, oh, I don't know, it's foreign and mysterious?
Or audiences just...
Yeah, there was, I think so.
Audiences were maybe just a lot more forgiving back in the 80s when it came to these things.
Also, yeah, it really does take like cinematic license. Like they keep it vague like that for the maximum impact of like the thrill machine. But I know what you mean. It's a little thin, but like that's where I mean that it works as like a fairy tale, like a kid's like rhyme novel where it's like, don't feed the so-and-so with the three steps to the, it's got that like childhood like rhyme vibe to it. And so that's what I related to as a little kid watching this movie, because it was like, he wasn't supposed to do that and he did that, and oh my god, you know.
But, yeah, that's true. Yeah. It is for kids. Like, it just sets the rules and you're expected to kind of follow the rules, which again can be read as very capitalist.
But what pisses me off, if they have rules, stick to the rules. Don't get them wet. How wet were these creatures getting in this movie? And it didn't matter. They're drinking things. They're walking through snow, which is water.
Yeah, but it's frozen water. Okay, it's fermented.
I don't care. They are getting... Okay, those gremlins are guzzling beer, toasting each other. You know, they're getting wet, really wet.
It's a wet movie.
And yet...
They're not yet. Yeah, exactly. See, that's the thing. If you delve even just a fraction of an inch, it's like it raises a bunch of questions. And like,
if they don't walk through snow, it can't be a person.
Yeah.
I know. They could multiply, but why'd it have to be water? I don't know.
Because it had to be water, because they could come up with the really excuse for that good scene in the YMCA when he jumps into the pool. Which I always love that scene.
The thing is, I think if they were to remake this movie now, they could do this, but they'd be smarter about these rules. They figure something out that would make these a little bit more realistic, if that's possible. I don't know.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
There's a lot of things. Like, first of all, you can't give them water. No living creature can survive without water anyways. They could be aliens too. We don't know what these things are. So, but.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your gremlins are?
You know, they have water inside of them, because clearly when you throw one in a microwave, it explodes. It reached a boiling point in 5 seconds. It had to have water in it.
Maybe it's a certain level of surface level water contact with the skin, and it has to reach a certain volume for these cells to absorb.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a little bit of beer and snow ain't got to do it. Like, they need at least like a fountain, like, you know.
Well, it wasn't just a spilled glass, I think, that started the whole.
That was, but it was a concentrated spilled glass. That's a good point, though. There would be that much water if they were in the, you know, but they were never in the rain, though. I never saw a rainy night in that movie.
See, all the water you're talking about, Nathan, has been altered with stuff. It's frozen. It's like hoppy and fermented. There's something there. I'll say that sometimes I would also rather have beer than water.
You said they can't get wet. That was the rule.
That's true. That could be any liquid. It doesn't have to be water.
Anyway, I'm nitpicking. I know there's so much I could nitpick on this, and you know, we could spend 10 hours nitpicking this movie.
I'm normally with you on the nitpicky bit.
Well, anyways, so we meet Gizmo back at the house where his dad gives Billy a 35-year-old man a Christmas present, I feel like. how old is Billy supposed to be in this movie?
He's supposed to be like, what is 17? He's supposed to be 17, yeah.
He works at the bank?
Yeah.
It would have been too on-the-nose Spielberg-y to have him work at a video store.
Well, you know? My prediction is, I mean, I don't know if you guys found any information on this. The original script or early script, Billy was probably supposed to be a 12 or 13-year-old boy.
Interesting. You know,
the script, everything Billy says sounds like it's coming out of a 12-year-old mouth.
Yeah.
He never looked at Phoebe Cates and said, awooga, so I don't know.
Yeah, like, if you think about, like, especially, like, the times where he talks about You know, I always thought Christmas Seven was supposed to be kind of happy and cheery. Like, you're 22 years old. What world do you live in? Of course, people are miserable and upset. You know, like, he's the most naive 22 year old ever.
Is and he 22 in the movie?
Is he? I feel like he works at a bank.
I think he was around that age in real life. I'm not sure.
He looks 30. I mean, I think he's 40, but.
Interesting, because I totally read him as like a teen.
I read him as like 25. Well.
And it's funny because the teen in The Holdover, I was like, this man is 40. Like, this is a grown man.
He looks old. Yeah.
Yeah.
With Dominic Sessa. He looks older. He plays old.
So he was 20, just almost 20 in real life.
A babe in the woods.
Yeah.
To be 20. I don't know. I kind of think maybe that was part of the like the wholesomeness that gets corrupted, right? The naivety of the family. But I can totally see it being a younger kid in the original script. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I don't know that for sure, but it just feels that way. And they recast him, but they never really changed parts of the script.
Yeah, I guess original.
Especially the toy robot. You know what I'm talking? Remember the toy robot? Like, who's that for?
That's true. So
original.
That's hilarious.
We're just gonna leave that in there. Because
it gets so much worse. The original picks instead of. Zach were either Judd Nelson or Emilio Estevez, which is not.
Emilio Estevez would have played it really, really seriously. Like, if Emilio Estevez was like combating the final gremlin stripe,
so
like
intense.
The camera would push in on him, and he'd be like, stripe. Like, Emilio Estevez would like serious, like, he would be like
really gone
the force. He would have been doing force on him.
So,
I think, like, same year, the kid level, like Maximum Overdrive, like intense staring.
Well, it would be entirely different movie. His energy would be so different. Like, yeah.
Repo Man came out this year with Emilio Estevez, and that's like, that's the energy he would have brought to Gremlins.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Oh. Absolutely.
That was weird. Shit. Yeah. All right.
He would have carried that.
So Billy takes him upstairs. You know, Gizmo, he just wants to sing. He doesn't need this in his life. He's just, he was doing well on his own, and he just.
They're so damn mean to Gizmo. Like, they are so mean. Of like, he's just sitting there, like, making music, and they hawk a wad of spit at him, and he's like, oh. I always feel so bad for him. Like, poor Gizmo,
Corey
man.
Feldman just being kind of.
I love it how about consumerism, like kids that get like bored really easy. I love it when Corey Feldman has that great line where like Zach is like, wow, did you see that? It multiplied. Isn't that amazing? And Corey Feldman's like, yeah, that's pretty great. And he like starts reading a magazine. He's like, no, I'm serious. It's really interesting. He's like, doesn't care at all.
Doesn't register.
Yeah. I love that.
So we got like five more. Mogwais that are clearly different demeanor than Gizmo. Mm-hmm.
Really cool special effect. They use balloons to make them like breathe. That's a really smart idea.
That's really cool. And Billy takes one to his science teacher at school. Who's that again? That actor?
I have no idea.
That's Glenn Turman. Who plays Mr. Hansen at the school? I've seen him in a few things. He's really good. And
yes, I love that scene. It's pretty.
The best scene is though when the mutation happens. We're jumping ahead here a little bit. Is the scene in that classroom after they're watching that like that old school like six like 8mm film of like animal heartbeats and stuff like that, and the bell rings, and then it's just him. He doesn't turn the lights on. He's just like there chasing this gremlin around. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah,
but I do think it is kind of the closest that the film skirts to horror.
Yes, you know? Absolutely. That's what I mean. The movie turn at the 50 minute mark, this movie goes full blown horror, which is really cool. It transitions to that in this movie. In this scene here is one of the best in the whole film. But what an idiot. I mean, what's he feeding him underneath this desk? This is a science teacher. He knows that this thing, he's talking about how the creature, this thing has metamorphosized, mm-hmm. and it's coming out something else. He knows it's a different type of creature. He doesn't know what it is yet. He is just going to have faith with some
blood candy. Work.
I'm just going to feed this thing. I don't know what it is under the desk. Also drove me nuts. Like, no person in the right mind would do that. Not even knowing what it looks like.
I know what you're saying. There's like a way to like have his character die, but in a more intelligent manner where he doesn't betray his science. Although that's another example of them.
We don't know that he's dead, actually. I mean, we assume he is.
True, he could have survived. Dead.
We believe that, but he's got a needle in his butt, you know. But
yeah, he got butt needled. I don't think Gremlins is tricking us on anything.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, we never see any human deaths like on screen.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
This is where projects come to life. Our showrooms are designed to inspire with the latest products from top brands, curated in an inviting, hands-on environment, and a team of industry experts to support your project. We'll be there to make sure everything goes as planned, from product selection to delivery coordination. At Ferguson Bath, Kitchen, and Lighting Gallery, your project is our priority.
Schedule your showroom consultation and see more from brands like Monogram at build.com/Ferguson.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming that they die.
I mean, we sort of see Mrs. Deagle fly out the window, but.
Yeah.
That's just a death,
On the radio, it's the only confirmed death I watch this movie with the subtitles on. Because I do that a lot these days. And if you listen to Rockin' Ricky Rialto, he confirms on the radio that Mrs. Deagle did die.
Oh, wow. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, because I never picked that up before.
That is, that scene, it's hilarious.
She actually dropped a house on her.
Yeah.
Well, she is the embodiment of the Wicked Witch from Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole threat to the dog Barney. Mm-hmm. Is Toto as an absolute reference to Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
On a brief style comment, I love how visually dense Gremlins is. Like, there's a lot of gags and information compacted into a lot of shots. So, an iconic example being the bar scene where it's every single puppet is active. There's stuff all over the place. Like, it's visually dense for me. I love the shot when it's pans down from the Spielberg movie theater where you see the alternate titles for his films. Then it follows Zach to work, and then it passes a Burger King, and it's small town, friendly people, Burger King, advertising, the movie theater. Oh, Mrs. Deagle's horrible. All in one shot.
You make such a good point, because I think in the absence of real deep character building, you're able to get this really fleshed out world.
Yes, definitely. They do a good job with the atmosphere of the movie. They just set the tone, and I love the holiday kind of creepy Christmas vibe. It's just
it's claustrophobic, but
it's
also kind of cozy sometimes. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we got to talk about the scene where the gremlins hatch and the mom finds them. By the way, I want to back up for 1 second because I noticed something regarding the mom that I never picked up before. Earlier in the movie, she's watching the end of It's a Wonderful Life. Mm-hmm. And it's the scene where George is running through the streets, shouting, Merry Christmas, movie house, Merry Christmas, Emporium. Mm. I never noticed this before, but ironically, in the movie Gremlins, the last two major set pieces that take place you know, in chronological order are the movie theater and then finally the department store, also known as an emporium. And that's, I never picked that up until this viewing of it. That's the last two set pieces of this movie. And that's what happens in It's a Wonderful Life, where he's shouting that. So
also shout out Mom for great taste.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
So
that's awesome. Yeah.
I thought that was just a really cool thing. I've seen this, like I said, I've seen this movie probably over 20 times. I never picked that up. There's a lot of things going on TV screens that making references to in the movie all the time. So anyway,
yeah, it's like a treasure trove. Especially,
can we say in terms of referential, and I know I've thrown a lot out tonight, but I think it's just littered with them, so it's easy to do. Looney Tunes. It's felt real Bugs Bunny vibes.
That's what I love. Yeah. It's like a wacky Warner Brothers cartoon nightmare movie. That's what I love.
Especially when we get to the Emporium.
Yes.
But we got to talk about the mom. And she sees those eggs. It looks like a scene from the movie Alien, actually. Those eggs.
Wet.
Do you guys agree that's one of the greatest needle drops of movie history? When the record player starts singing, Do You Hear What I Hear?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, that was so good.
That's still one of the greatest moments. And
that's my mom's favorite Christmas song, and I know associated with this.
Yeah. And you guys want to talk about that kitchen scene? I mean, that's iconic.
That scene is incredible because it just like takes the movie to like – it's still – I mean, we've seen the horror by this point, but like a lot of the movie has been like cute and family and gizmo. And this scene where she basically full-on defends herself and like successfully attacks the gremlins – it's so hardcore. And what I like about it is that it's not, it's one of the scenes in the movie that's not played for laughs. I mean, there's humor in it, but it's creepier. Like the gremlin getting microwaved and like her like stabbing the other one. Like she's basically it's dark. She's like fighting for her life. And I love it when she goes to the door and she thinks she heard something and you see like the shadow of a gremlin like along the wall disappear. Like that always creeped me out as a kid because I was like, oh my God, that's one of them. They've hatched. But that whole kitchen scene, yeah, I just love the tone of it. I just like how it's more serious and horror and like creepy in nature and also like disgustingly entertaining in so Gremlins fashion.
Here's the thing. You explode something in a microwave. I love your movie. That is super fun for me. Also, it sets the mom up as the straight man, the serious one. Like you can see that she's probably the one who's keeping the household running because
it's really not like that.
It's like just a great commentary on like those dynamics in the 80s as well.
Now, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here for a moment. So the mom comes in. Put yourself in the gremlin's position for a moment. What were they doing wrong to?
They suck. They're wet and weird.
No, but they're just in the kitchen. You know, they saw yum yums, and the woman comes in and just first of all, you know, throws one into the mixer. And then, what did they do to her? You know, first of all, she drew first blood. She drew first blood.
Wow. You know? Okay, gremlin sympathizer on this podcast.
I'm kidding. I don't know. I just thought it was kind of funny. She came in with guns ablazing.
She came in hot.
She did. Like, she saw these things and like, I'm just taking them out.
But I think that's so like Western. Yeah, cool. Like there's a good guy and a bad guy and you don't need to know why. He's just bad. Like rock and roll.
Yeah, like the eerie.
I'm begging you not to think about it too much.
I'm overthinking all of this. I'm overthinking all of this because what else have I got to do?
You are.
I got to fuck with this, you know.
Oh my God!
I just like the build up, like right before they hatch, and like Gizmo's having trouble sleeping, and like you feel like the dude, like you feel a sense of dread coming. So I feel like that mom scene where she fights them is a really satisfying payoff to that buildup of suspense. Cause you're like, oh my God, they're here. And this is like serious now. And she's got to survive. And like when she, you know, I love when she knocks the stocking and there's the robot present for like 21 year old Zach. But,
she's 45.
When she is like, where's the, you don't know where the gremlin is. And you see its eyes light up in the Christmas tree behind her. And like, oh my God, that was good. I know that jump scare so well now that it's like mechanical for me at this point because I've watched it to death. But that always used to get me when it was in the tree like that. I love that shot.
You're so right. That's good.
Classic. Yeah.
So Stripe is the only one that survives. He gets away and goes to the YMCA and eventually jumps into the pool where he makes hundreds, thousands of undetermined amount of gremlins. We don't know how many.
A flock of gremlins.
Some
would say a murder of gremlins.
A murder of gremlins by Joe Dante.
I was going with a gaggle of gremlins, but whatever.
I like that, a gaggle of gremlins, because that's like, gaggle of gremlins.
And I think, is that when like the real chaos in Kingston Falls takes place, where we get shenanigans, where they just start messing with everything and pretending that they're Christmas carolers and going after the Futtermans and they take out Mrs. Deagle. I think this is the order of things.
They go after the Futtermans, like in that when they take the vehicle and like and drive through the Futterman's house. I love it when it like cuts to like Dick Miller. He's like, oh my God, there's a gremlin in my house. Ah! because all his paranoid fears have been confirmed real. And he's like, oh my God, it's a real gremlin.
It's a real gremlin.
That scene amuses the hell out of me. And I've always felt a little bit bad for his wife earlier in that scene where she's like, 'tis the season. She's singing. She's like, right, Murray? And he's just like, nah, I'm watching TV, damn foreign TV. Like, he's just like in his miserable world and she's trying to like be festive and he's not responding to it.
Should have bought a Zenith, right?
Should have bought a Zenith.
Yeah. Forgot about Zenith. Yeah.
There's a great nod to Futterman's like paranoia there when in the tavern scene, which we'll talk about, one of the gremlins goes to shoot Phoebe Cates and misses and hits like a World War II bomber, like an RAF, and just a nod to the gremlins. Yeah. It's like, that's good.
Yeah.
It's a good bit.
Exactly. There's like the movie is chock full of bits everywhere and like sometimes multiple times at once in the same shot. That's why I like it.
Yeah.
And like, I promise I will shut up about it. I'll say really quick that Gremlins 2 pushes that concept further. That's all I'm saying.
Gremlins 2, where Zach is 63.
Yeah. Gremlins 2 is a New York City, like, cynical, like, Nathan, you will especially, I think you will like it. You will be reviewing it in late 2024.
Okay.
Or 2025, I don't know.
Is it a Christmas movie?
No, it's a New York summer movie.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Dory's Tavern, because that's kind of a big scene.
One of my favorites.
Well, I kind of used to like it, but this the thing that I did not like about the Gremlins is when they start to mimic like American culture and dressing up, because I like the Gremlins when they are chaotic and causing the mischief. But when they start like mimicking Flashdance, it's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a little much for me. But you know what? I don't hate it. I don't hate this scene, but it goes on and on and on.
It's long. And that's when I start to get real, like, I get it vibes, but I do like it because I think it's like so the creative. Only time we get to see Phoebe Cates' character do anything.
Yeah,
but it is
magic, this scene. It really is.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like it's definitely a set piece in the movie. You know what I mean? Like the bar scene. Like, yeah.
What's going on in this? I can't deny it. It is a ton of fun, but there's some just things are just ridiculous. Why are they taking the time to learn how to play poker when their main objective is just chaos?
Because they're just wacky little guys. Wacky little guys, Nathan. That's what
they had some sense of culture. I mean, they like Snow White. They like the movie. They actually enjoy the movie.
Okay, can we talk about the movie theater? Because that is my favorite scene.
We'll get there in a moment. Why is Phoebe Cates serving them drinks?
Probably because they all rushed into the bar. Guys. And they like gave her no choice. And if she tries to run away, they'll like maul her or something. You know what I mean?
Have you considered that she's working really hard for tips, actually?
Are they tipping her?
Maybe.
What are they tipping her with? What do they have?
Hard money, maybe. They seem like thieves.
They, I could see them stealing for sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I just that whole aspect of the scene just,
listen,
just did not
make
sense.
Phoebe Cates just has hospitality embedded in her bones.
I think that it's probably the fact that, you know, when you're working at a bar, you are just, it's ingrained in you that you have to, no matter what, you have to serve the customers.
That's the thing. And they just like ran in and like started ordering drinks. Like they just like rushed the place and she's like, I'm stuck. Yeah.
I'm stuck here.
Why
even
not?
If she wanted to leave, they wouldn't. They, you know, she wouldn't take
Nathan,
kindly to
you
that.
Can't have it both ways. The mom shoots first. That's bad. Phoebe tries to be kind, peace treaty, olive
that's,
branch.
There's
that's
no
the
consistency to any of the rules to this. That's the thing. That's what I'm talking about. Their character motivations. It's crazy.
I see. I know what you mean. Like I know what you mean in theory, and I like totally like appreciate it and get it. I think for me the satire of the gremlins mimicking humans and just being like drunk, like a-hole versions of humans that are like raunchy and raucous. I totally buy into that. Like, so that comedy stuff, as long as it's like funny, that it totally works for me. And I get that about the rule breaking, but I don't, the movie's set of rules is so thin that for me, Gremlins is more a theme about like anarchy, and so like all that stuff and the crazy antics and like them doing the like, you know, dancing video and stuff in the bar, it's just like part of the mayhem. Yeah, it's like a wild party from hell or something. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, after this they do escape. Billy comes and rescues her, and they go to work. they go to the bank to hide out for a little bit, and this is where her name is Kate, right? She shares the story about what happened to her dad. Now, again, I do like this movie.
This is
I love
nuts.
This movie, but
this is nuts.
This story is. I remember at the time
messed up.
I'll let you guys talk in a second here. I remember when I watched this growing up, I'm like, this is awful. Like, this is a terrible thing. I cracked up listening to this time. This is the most bizarre. It's not that it's not a heartbreaking story, but the way that this comes up during this chaos where she just, this comes out of, not out of like, what I would say a moment of vulnerability, but it's coming out of this moment where, out of frustration that she said, now this is another reason why I hate Christmas. And it's just such a bizarre moment for her to share this story. It's not about the story and what happened. It's just the timing of this makes no sense to me. I feel like now.
It's a random like payoff from when earlier in the movie when she's like, I'm not cheery at Christmas, and Billy is like, I thought people on Christmas were happy. Like, why aren't you happy? Then she's like, later on, she's like, I'll tell you why. Because my father like tried to be Santa Claus, jumped in a chimney, and like died, which is just nuts. But like,
And they smelled him.
I always thought the scene was like a weird, quirky character thing about her. So I found it interesting. But I will say that Spielberg apparently did not want that story in the movie. And he had recommended Joe Dante to cut it. But Joe Dante held firm and wanted to keep that scene. And so Spielberg said, you know, no worries. Like, you're the director. It's your movie. But like, that was the one scene that I thought of note. Spielberg was not a huge fan of that. So I read.
I don't know. It's dark as hell, and it also probably ruined the magic of Santa Claus for some young kids too that were watching this movie.
Yeah, it's a little strange. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also acknowledged and made fun of in Gremlins too, I agree. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a real bizarre character moment. Like I said, I think the timing of it is the real crime of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the thing. I know what you mean. It does exist there randomly. Like, even though it sort of works on me, it does feel like random character moment, quiet scene before, like, we need, it just, it's only purpose. It's like, it's a lull before the next like action. It's like, okay, the theater blew up, the whole thing, or no, it didn't, that didn't happen yet. But like
the tavern did, yeah.
Yeah. They just stop for a moment. It's like, they take a break from the movie. She's like, here's a story. Okay. Let's go back to set. And then they like continue with Gremlins.
I do think you need the lull, but that wasn't how, they could have just
hung out and talked. Yeah.
Yeah. It did prove that there are two monsters in this movie, Gremlins and the Grinch.
But you know, after they leave, it actually is a really cool moment. I love the, when they leave the bank and they go out and everything is quiet and peaceful.
Yes.
And all of downtown is, it's empty. And it's a really nice moment where I think that is the moment where the movie breathes for a second, for a few moments. It's a beautiful scene of the, of downtown, of the downtown area. And that's where they find eventually that the gremlins are all gone into the movie theater.
Hi ho.
Yeah. And they, Billy, Inglorious Bastards, all of them. I like to think that Quentin Tarantino got the idea from this movie.
I do remember seeing this film like on VHS later on when I was like 10 or 9, and I was watching it with friends and his mom, and she hadn't seen the movie before. And like the second he decides to like, you know, set fire to the theater, when he's like, you know, like turning the gas fuse or whatever, she's watching it and is like, they're gonna blow up the theater? That's so irresponsible. There's other ways to handle this. Like, they're gonna blow up the theater?
That always stuck in my mind. Ridiculous. Like, it does not ensure they're gonna kill all the gremlins. There's probably so many exits out of that place.
Okay. That scene rips. It's super fun. I love that it's Snow White, of all the things. That seems
I love that they like actually enjoy it. Like, that's what's hilarious. So, yes, like, into
I was watching this. I'm like, man, Steven Spielberg cannot let a movie go by without telling us how much he loves movies. Like, this guy loves the movies.
Yeah.
I do think it's funny that of all the Disney movies they chose the one with like dwarves and also like picking diamonds. It was like the mining scene. There is a little something there, I think. But it was just, I love watching them all like doing their little dance, because Gizmo likes to sing and these guys like to move it. I don't know.
And Gizmo picked up the hi-ho song too when he was leaving too, which was really great.
It was a good time. Yeah. Good time at the movies until it wasn't. But it's a good time for me.
And And Stripe goes out to the lobby before this happens, and they're out of popcorn, but he sees across the street at the department store with the big sign that says candy, so he goes to get more yum-yums. So he escapes the big burning theater, and...
This is where projects come to life. Our showrooms are designed to inspire with the latest products from top brands, curated in an inviting, hands-on environment, and a team of industry experts to support your project. We'll be there to make sure everything goes as planned, from product selection to delivery coordination. At Ferguson Bath, Kitchen, and Lighting Gallery, your project is our priority.
Schedule your showroom consultation and see more from brands like Monogram at build.com/Ferguson.
This is where projects come to life. Our showrooms are designed to inspire with the latest products from top brands, curated in an inviting, hands-on environment, and a team of industry experts to support your project. We'll be there to make sure everything goes as planned, from product selection to delivery coordination. At Ferguson Bath, Kitchen, and Lighting Gallery, your project is our priority.
Schedule your showroom consultation and see more from brands like Monogram at build.com/Ferguson.
There's the showdown at the department store, which I think they used one corner of the department store. They kept redecorating it for each scene, if you notice closely.
I did not notice that. Yeah, that was good movie magic on me. By the end of the movie, I was like, okay, this is the end of the movie.
Like all the radio TVs and then the sporting goods department. It's the same corner that Billy keeps walking around. But it's okay.
It kind of reminded me of our Bad Santa episode. Like, because there's a department store shooting that too, and I was like, yeah. Man, this is just Christmas I love, back when malls were a thing.
Well, it wasn't even like a mall. I mean, this is all downtown. That's really, it made me really nostalgic for, you know, I used to live in some towns that had like the big town green and not a single chain store anywhere. Yeah. And that's what I remember. Besides, there was a Burger King. They showed that in the beginning, but everything else was a mom and pop store. And even the department store, that was not a Sears or anything like that. That was just a mom and pop department store. Probably not even like a big one, you know, probably no more than maybe.
Yeah,
like,
but gone are the days of even department stores. Square
feet. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, that was, you know, so it was really cool, you know, having seen that.
Yeah, I just, I love just the production design and feel of the department store in that scene, the eerie with the lights off and like Stripe appearing on the television screen. Like I just, that whole department store scene and the showdown and like the pacing of that scene, like structurally, I love that because it's just like classic. The hero versus the villain, and like Gizmo comes in and saves the day. Like I just like that being the climax setting for the movie and having it a one-off. Like it just feels like an added bonus after the big like set piece of the theater blowing up and all that, that you get a satisfying like one-on-one you know, fight like that. A duel, and like the chain, not the chainsaw, the blade and stuff. Like
a real chainsaw.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah,
that's right, I forgot about that. Yeah,
designed for gremlin size thing. But real chainsaw. Yeah.
Real chainsaw.
And so I was glad that it was like in a medium. Like it would have been different if it was in like a giant empty. Like I liked that it was in more of a smaller store like that.
Thank God it wasn't a Walmart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super Center.
So we have then it ends. You know, the big showdown. Stripe finds the water fountain, and what amazing. Again, the special effects where he's climbing up the water fountain and those bubbles are coming off of his back and he's about to like spurt out more of those creatures. And that whole thing where the sunlight is when Gizmo raises up the shade and Stripe falls in the water, he jumps out and he is just melting away. That is some of the best really practical effects that I've seen from the 80s.
I'm a staunch practical effects person, and I love when it's blended really well with CGI, and I think they did a good job in this movie of that. I went to go see the new Hunger Games recently, and it was just so artificial, and I'm just so exhausted by looking at things that are so flat and feel so two-dimensional and lifeless. And I think obviously CGI has its place and we're going to use it for a long, long time, but it just felt so nice to have something that felt really tactile and had a lot of texture on the screen. I'm just like, man, bring that back.
Yeah. It's just such a real, like it just made the creature seem like a real, like biological, like creepy organism. I just remember being as a little kid being really, really satisfied with that climax and impressed by like Stripe's like death scene. I just felt like the movie pays off well there and like gives you the classic, like what you want. And so when it got to the end of the movie, I just felt like kind of like emotionally satisfied. Like, yeah. And I was entertained and wow, crazy, you know?
Yeah. By the way, I want to give a shout out to Mushroom the dog. He did some good dog acting in this movie. Some of the best I've had.
Yes.
A lot of movies I've seen. Yeah. So, yeah.
He has like a little faux hawk going on.
Yeah.
With his fur.
Because he goes up to that puddle of slime at the end of that. I'm like, don't put your nose in that. Something bad's going to happen. I always see that scene. I'm like, I always think he's going to put his paw in that or something. And he doesn't. But like, ugh.
Good boy.
That's right.
Take the sequel in a different direction. A gremlin dog. Right?
A grog.
So, all right. We've gone through this movie. And, the final scene, of course, we can't forget that, is when they go back to the house and Mr. Wing comes back to take Gizmo back home. And Any thoughts?
Do you think
this?
There are other gizmos in the shop, and our gizmo is like, you guys are never going to believe what happens.
One thing I do feel is like a little bit emotionally over the top. Like it's supposed to tug at the heartstrings, but it makes me laugh. I still love it. Like I'm amused by it, but when Gizmo turns at the last minute before he's going back into the box and he's like, bye, Billy.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, but it's not bad. It's good. But it's just funny because I just like know what they're going for there. And to me, it's like a little bit overdone.
Yeah. A little E.T. phone home.
Yeah, it's good, but nothing compares to like E.T. saying like, I'll be right here or something like that. Oh, I mean, that was so – that's just like – that's like up on the mountaintop, and this is more just like cutesy merchandise. Hey, yeah. Billy, you know. I still love it. Like that's – I'm just being like lightly critical, you know.
I am always like, how far did Mr. Wing walk? Like that looks like a trek. And was Gizmo singing hi ho?
Going to the bus station. That's how he's going to the bus station.
I do love that last Matt shot though of him like walking out into the night. That's like such a mystical, snowy like. And when he walks out and I already was talking about the family just standing there in the doorway. It's like they're like postcard ready in that scene.
Yeah. Gremlins, good movie.
Yeah. It works.
I love it. Just the tone. It's enjoyable for sure.
All right. So I think, this was a really fun discussion on the film. I think we can close the book on Gremlins. But I think before we do, let me do just a little bit of housekeeping. So as we said before, this is our last episode of 2023. I can't believe we are here.
Crazy.
But I think like 40, 41 episodes. I can't keep track. It's a lot. It's been a busy year. But I just want to thank, you know, everyone that has been following us, listening to our show, sharing, giving us ratings and reviews on any of the podcast platforms this year. We really appreciate it. We also would love to get your feedback on our discussion of Gremlins. It would mean a lot to us if you would send us an email or contact us on any of our social media outlets. You can email us at backtotheframerate@gmail.com. You can also find us on the social media platforms. Our handle is backtotheframerate. Your support is greatly appreciated, so please just take a moment. And it would be great if you left a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever your preferred.
And it would be great if it was 5 stars.
Podcast, yes. Any podcast app you use would be appreciated. So, yeah. So let's get to our recommendation shelf.
Mm-hmm. Sir.
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You mean you haven't heard anybody say anything about either one of these?
Nope.
Well, what about these two?
They suck.
So our recommendation shelf theme this week as a tie-in to Gremlins is consumerism in film. Mm-hmm. So we are going to recommend some films. Here we go. B, would you like to begin?
Sure. I think anytime there's consumerism, or a lot of times when there's consumerism in a movie, it's anti. Right.
Yes.
That was sort of what was bubbling up for me. I think, you know, of course, Marvel and Hasbro and Toy Story, you get stuff. But I went staunchly anti-consumerist for this one, and I went with Sorry to Bother You, the 2018 Boots Riley film, which is just awesome. It's so visually inventive. It's stunning. It keeps you on your toes the whole time. And it has this very overt theme of anti-capitalism, anti-consumerism. The essential points of the plot are that a low-level telemarketer, Cassius or Cash Green, finds this magical key to succeeding at work, which is this insane Jedi-level code switching that he does, and is able to progress through the ranks until he encounters the cocaine snorting, freewheeling CEO who offers him positions beyond his wildest dreams. and how that rampant consumerism affects his life and his relationships and is maybe not as great as he thought it would be. It is packaged in just one of the coolest movies. Lakeith Stanfield is insane in this film. He's just crushing it. Tessa Thompson also doing amazing work in this movie. Terry Crews is in it. He's really great. But it's just, it's so unpredictable. Every time something happened in this film, I was like, what? That's what happens next? It just, it kept me on my toes the whole time. I absolutely loved it. So folks should watch that if you're able. It's on Prime, it's on Tubi, it's on Video On Demand. Go check it out.
Yeah, I recommend quality it as film. Well. It's definitely has an absurdist quality to it as well.
Yes.
It's a movie that I almost recommended when we were doing absurdist films, and we were doing Beau Is Afraid that week. And I said, this is something to...
It's very surreal.
It was almost there. But yeah, that was a great pick. I'm glad somebody finally brought it up.
And I will say, if you want to buy something, there's an artist on Etsy who makes the earrings from that film.
Oh,
so you should go find that.
Very cool. All right. Sam, what have you got for us this week?
So I'm going to go with another Joe Dante film, actually. It came out in 1998. It's called Small Soldiers. And in many ways, it's very similar to Gremlins. Gremlins is a much more successful genre picture, and that it kind of hits all the marks like really well. Small Soldiers is a bit more uneven, but I highly, highly enjoy it. I find it entertaining. In a nutshell, it's a film about a kid who his father, like Gremlins, works at a toy store and is an unsuccessful inventor. And the kid gets a hold of a new toy that this corrupt corporate company has put out. And in a nutshell, it's run by Dennis Leary. And in order to, sell these like military, doll toys to kids, they actually amp them up and put military level sophisticated chips into the toys, making the toys totally destructible, like organized, highly intelligent. They want to shoot things. So it's the Gremlin theme of like a toy or like a cuddly one out of control, but it's different. I find the movie really amusing. Kirsten Dunst is in it. Gregory Smith, Tommy Lee Jones is the voice of one of the soldiers. And this is one of Phil Hartman's last film, if not the last film he shot before his murder, unfortunately. And so he's hilarious in this. I think this movie takes the cynical tone of Gremlins and pushes it to an unbelievable level. Without giving anything away, I'll simply say that there's a really good moral character in the film who's like, I can't believe what this horrible company has done to us. No amount of money could change this. And like Dennis Leary just walks into the shot, writes him a check, and he's like, oh, never mind. You guys are great. And I'm like, Joe Dante. Yes.
This is such a good movie.
You've seen it. Yes. I've missed it. Yeah. I love it. Isn't it great? It's a wacky movie. Yeah.
This is the Joe Dante movie that I grew up on.
Yes, I love this movie. And see, I did. What's interesting to me is I did not grow up on it. See, I grew up on Gremlins. Mm-hmm. I saw this movie much later, like on TV. Literally, no joke, I was like in India, and like we were like watching this in a hotel room, and I'm like, this movie is great. How did I miss this? Like, I love it. It's crazy too. It's like anarchy tone, like Gremlins. It's just got that cynical Joe Dante vibe that I love.
Joe Dante really has the energy though of like his mom left his dad for an inventor, you know, and he's like mad about it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's like, it's a charged atmosphere there. There's an undercurrent in his films.
100%. But this movie's good.
Yeah, definite recommend. I mean, obvious consumerism, like there's, you know, evil, greedy corporations selling like products, but like, enjoy the hell out of it. Not a huge success in summer 98 because there were big movies like Armageddon and stuff like that, but did well. And I think it was like more of like a cult hit on, you know, video and stuff afterward. But I friggin' love it. So that would be
I'm driving across the lawn. That'll be with me forever.
Yes. It's awesome. Yeah. I love it.
I need to check it out. I have to check it out. I haven't seen it in 23 years or so. It's been a long time. But yeah.
It just has a cool tone to it that I like.
I watched it on a TV that had a VHS player as part of the TV.
Oh, nice. Yes. I love those details. So that's a really like good memory. Like that gave me an atmosphere of that memory, you know, like, yeah.
And I was checking, this is it's streaming now on Max and Paramount Plus, and it's on VOD.
I have no excuse. Yeah.
And just to back up, I don't know if you mentioned B, but Sorry mm-hmm. to Bother You is also on Prime Video, Tubi, and VOD. Mm-hmm. Just all right. So my pick, if I can cue it up here. So my pick for this week for consumerism in film, or I guess anti-consumerism is really what we're doing. I think this is truly a cinematic achievement. this is directed by the legendary Larry Cohen. If you don't know the name Larry Cohen, then I'm sorry. He's one of the old guard who worked in TV going back into the 50s. He would go on to write for shows like The Fugitive and The Defenders. Mm. It wasn't until the 70s that he made a name for himself in the horror and blaxploitation genre. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend checking out some of his early work on films like Black Caesar, It's Alive, It Lives Again is another one. He also directed one of my favorite 80s creature features. The movie is called Q, just the letter Q, and it's starring David Carradine. I really love that film. But the movie that ties in so beautifully into our theme this week is the 1985 film The Stuff.
And it stars, I have not seen this.
It stars Michael Moriarty and Paul Sorvino, Andrea I'm going to mess up his name. Andrea Markovici, I think is how you say it. It's got Garrett Morris, who plays Chocolate Chip Charlie in it. Great character actor and comedian.
Oh, nice.
So this film.
We got the poster. Awesome.
Yeah. This film serves as this scathing critique of consumer culture and how people blindly just follow trends and consume products without questioning its origins or potential dangers. Basically, without giving too much of the plot away, a mysterious white substance is discovered on Earth, and due to corporate greed, it gets immediately packaged up and sold to people for profit because people just can't get enough of the stuff.
Oh, I love this.
It's the summit of a horror film. So yeah, there's some horrible things that just happen. It just gets nasty in this movie.
It's branded like a horror film.
Yeah. The film, it's just a biting satire that is poking fun at the advertising industry and how it manipulates public opinion and to its very gullible consumer base. It's one of the best movies, you know, honestly, about unchecked capitalism. So it's a B movie for sure, but it is saying so much.
So I might watch this tonight.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's on AMC Plus, it's on Tubi, it's on Pluto, Shudder, and you can rent it on VOD.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Adding that to my watch list.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
And I really like It's Alive. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my pick this week. And let us know if you watch any of our recommendations and let us know what you think. So there you have it. So, and any other closing thoughts on the end of the year?
Bye, Billy.
So good.
Well, this has been fun, 2023. You know, next week we are going to do something a little different. The show that comes out on New Year's Day is going to be not a movie review, but we're going to be doing a 1984 movie draft, which I think is going to be a lot of fun. Ellie is still going to be on vacation, but we're going to do a, like I said, 84 movie draft. So tune in for that. And it's going to be a lot of fun because it's the 40-year anniversary of all these movies that we're going to be drafting. And tune in for that, and you'll learn about what that's going to be. So, and then we're going to take a week off and come back a couple weeks after that with some all new content, new movies that we're watching, and can't wait for what's going to come in 2024. So. Stick with us.
The adventure continues.
All right. So that concludes the show for this week. We appreciate your listenership. And as a final reminder, if you're enjoying what you hear, please consider leaving a rating and review. Your support truly brightens our day. The ideal platforms for this are Apple Podcasts or iTunes or whichever platform you use to access our content. To stay updated, I didn't mention this before, but don't forget to subscribe to our monthly newsletter, Frame Rate Monthly. You can do that by sending an email to backtotheframerate@gmail.com. Back to the Frame Rate is a proud member of the Weston Media Podcast Network. So stay connected with us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle again is Back to the Frame Rate. And of course, the most effective way to support us is by sharing our episodes. Please share our episodes on your social media platforms. Support means the world to us.
2023, what a long, strange trip it's been. And I got to say, it all comes down to the greatest movie of the year, 65 with Adam Driver. That's why I became a podcaster. That's just it doesn't get any better than that. Mm-hmm. Nothing else came out this year. That's our message for you all. 65, that was it. It was great.
So long.
Just
thanks
kidding.
For all the fish.
It's possible that the world ended at that episode and this has all been a dream after that. Who knows?
It's possible. It's possible.
All right. The show is over. Goodbye.
I want you to know it's over.
Well, bye.
This is where projects come to life. Our showrooms are designed to inspire with the latest products from top brands, curated in an inviting, hands-on environment, and a team of industry experts to support your project. We'll be there to make sure everything goes as planned, from product selection to delivery coordination. At Ferguson Bath Kitchen and Lighting Gallery, your project is our priority.
Schedule your showroom consultation and see more from brands like Monogram at build.com/Ferguson.
This is where projects come to life. Our showrooms are designed to inspire with the latest products from top brands, curated in an inviting, hands-on environment and a team of industry experts to support your project. We'll be there to make sure everything goes as planned, from product selection to delivery coordination. At Ferguson Bath Kitchen and Lighting Gallery, your project is our priority.
Schedule your showroom consultation and see more from brands like Monogram at build.com/Ferguson.